With monthly TV costs creeping up, it's time to break away from contracts and dive into a world of free entertainment. Get over 170 channels and all your streaming favourites, where you're free to pause, record and rewind live TV. Order today and live life free at freesat.co.uk.
Satellite dish and installation fees may apply. T&Cs apply. See freesat.co.uk for details.
Unlock a new skill. Unlock your inner confidence. Unlock the next level in your career. Whatever your job history, you can get the skills you need to unlock the job you want. There are hundreds of free opportunities for adults, from learning essential maths to skills boot camps in digital and qualifications to help you get where you want to be. Unlock your potential. Unlock your phone and visit gov.uk/skillsforlife today.
You're listening to Dropping the Gloves with former NHL All-Star John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
John Scott, the All-Star man. John Scott, the family man.
Thank you for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott. Woo!
Yeah! How's it going, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. A nice Friday episode. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate the support. Tim, you went home. Got away from the hurricane. Was that on purpose? Running away from the big storm headed your way?
Well, not exactly. Tomorrow is a bachelor party for my brother.
Oh, that's right.
But I was going to fly out tonight, Friday night, but with the hurricane going on, I knew I wouldn't get out. So I ended up leaving yesterday morning. Bit of a long day, but I got here. I'm home. I'm back in Boston. And
frantically planning the final touches of the bachelor party. It's going to be insane. Are you ready for the debauchery that's going to go down?
I got to pick up Cheez-Its, Oreos, Sprite. What if the store doesn't have Sprite? I have to go to a second store. These are the things you don't think about, you know? So it'll be fine.
I wish I was there. It's going to be, I don't know. Like the young kids, their bachelor parties. What you guys, I'm excited to know the results Monday morning. I'm very, very excited. We'll all be thinking about all the fun you're going to have. It's going to be epic. It's going to be so great, right?
It's going to be legendary. It's going to be awesome.
I hope so. What did you think of that Zuccarello? We like to do a recap of the interviews. What did you think? One of our better ones, one of our worst ones?
One of our better ones. I could tell maybe he didn't want to be there as much as some other players do. He was kind of looking around the room when he was talking, little things like that. But it was cool that he was, and we got some good stories. And that one with Torch just blew up online, the Carmelo Anthony
That's
story.
Pretty funny.
Yeah, that was pretty good. The Rangers fan base got a hold of that. So that was fun, and a couple other good nuggets there. So it was good. It was cool to get him on.
I did the same thing when I played for the Hawks, not to the extent of putting on his jersey and stuff, but I actually stole Derrick Rose's shoes.
What?
When he was with the Chicago Bulls. And I have him somewhere in a box somewhere. Just because okay. He had like six pairs of them in his locker, and I'm like, these fit me perfectly. He won't miss one pair.
Did he ever wear them, or?
When he was like MVP candidate. So
were they like on display, or did you ever wear them around, or what?
You know what it was? Basketball players, they put special soles in them. So I didn't really wear them because there was no insole in the shoe. So they must just like take their soles out for different shoes. I guarantee you they get them like specially made from doctors and stuff because they're basketball players. They're on their feet all the time. But so I never wore them because they were uncomfortable. It was just flat. But I have them. But then they'd say D Rose on them or something. I was going to ask him for his autograph, but then I thought I'd get in trouble. But here's your shoes. I stole them. But yeah, that was a good story. Zooks, you could tell you're right. He wasn't interested. And the last few, Swayman and him, they do the interview from the rink.
Yeah.
It's not as good because there's distractions. He had Kirill there the whole time, peeking in, giving him a hard time, playing jokes with him. What was funny, you guys didn't see, the listeners, and you probably didn't see it at all. You don't watch the interviews. They are on YouTube if you want to, though. Before the interview even started, Kirill popped in and we were chatting because Zooks was not happy about my statement saying that, you know, imagine if Kirill had some line mates, how many goals he would score. Zooks caught wind of it. not happy. And Kirill came in. He's like, no zooks, no goals or something in Russian. I couldn't understand that well, but he was there. I know. I tried to get him. Yeah. I tried to get him because I know the PR guy for Minnesota. And so I was like, Sicky, his name is Aaron Sickman. Like, give me Kirill. He's like, your Kirill's not talking to anybody. Like, there's no way you're getting Kirill ever. He won't even do interviews for a long time because of that whole Russia thing, getting out of Russia, the whole debacle surrounding him. So there, he will not talk for a long time about that topic.
Yeah, that story is crazy. I was reading a little bit about it. It reminds me of the stuff from the 80s, like getting Fedorov and all those Russian guys out of the Soviet Union. Like, it's crazy. The clandestine ops is nuts.
The McGilney, it's playing in Buffalo. You heard a little bit because there's a couple guys who were around when McGilney came in, and the secrecy, all like there was a ton of stuff that was going on, like the KGB agents in Buffalo trying to get McGilney. Like, it was, Russia's a wild country. Did you see the USA just said everyone out? And there's something like 40 or 50 North American hockey players playing in Russia currently. What would you do? Here's a scenario. If you're Canadian or American, either way, both countries, I think, have told everybody living there to come home, but you're making like $5 million. You just left the AHL after chasing your dream for a long time in the NHL, and you just said, you know what? I'm going to go cash in. And you signed a couple-year deal in Russia with the KHL. Would you leave and risk never seeing any of that money? This is your time. But then if you stay, you could be a political prisoner somehow.
I just moved my flight up for a hurricane. So you know I would have been out of Russia way before it got to this point. I would not have had to make a decision. It would have been like the first wind of it. I'd be like, okay, I'm out of here. So
You have no kids, no family, no wife, and you're there and you're 26, 27. You only have a finite amount of years to make this money, and you signed a big deal with, I don't know, what's a big KHL team? Moscow, whatever it is. Like, gosh, I would be inclined to stay. Just ride it out.
Well, you know, the guy like handlers with the team or from the government, just talking to those guys like, hey, listen, all this stuff going on, you have nothing to worry about. Like, we're just going to keep doing our thing. We want you to stay. Here's some extra cash. Here's what do you need? We'll get it for you. Don't worry about all the noise. It's not going to bother. And they'll say whatever they can do to get those guys to stay and just turn their eyes to it. So it is kind of scary.
Or they just don't let them leave.
Yeah, that too.
Because after I finished playing, there was a few guys who I played with who would go to Russia and do like big tours and do events and play games and stuff. I'm not going to say who, because I don't want to get them in trouble, but they would pay you big money, and you would party with these like Russian oligarchs, the big oil guys, because they all love hockey for whatever reason. And so you'd go and you'd play in these games. I'm sure you've seen the videos of like Putin skating around and stuff, but they do that, but maybe on a lesser scale. And they, like, the stories they would have when they would come back are incredible. Like, just insane things they would do where they would just literally give them fully automatic machine guns, and they would go around and just spray everything, whatever they wanted. They would have like luxury up the yin yang, trains and planes and cars and Range Rovers everywhere. And everything was secretive because you're always worried about getting robbed, and they would go to bars and clubs, and it was just insane. The stories they had were just incredible. And they asked me if I wanted to go, and I didn't even ask my wife, because it was just like, I know the answer is no. And even if it was yes, I don't think I would have gone, because, you know, it's just trouble. It's trouble, Tim. But anyways, Zook interview was good. I like it.
Yeah. Anyway, back to Zook. Yeah, it was pretty good. It was
back
good.
To other stuff. Well, because the longer I talk, the more I'll get in trouble. So I just try to, because I do, you know, things slip out. And then maybe when I'm like 80 and if this podcast is still going, I'll just go scorched earth.
Yeah.
And just like, I would never do that either. The people who leave the game and then all of a sudden they are on a higher moral ground, and they just, what these guys are doing is terrible. I'm like, you did it too. And now you're complaining because you're not benefiting from it. It's like all the fighters who left the game, and all of a sudden they're like, well, I don't think fighting is good. We should get rid of it because of the concussions. Oh, because you've gotten your money. Now you want to leave and like stay relevant again. And like, undercut all the fighters that are currently in the NHL. I'm like, kick rocks, you guys. Like, that's so, it's just, that stuff drives me nuts. Yeah, I don't like that stuff. But anyway, hey, did you see Tua Tagliola, the Miami? He should not have been playing.
He should not have been playing. It's really scary. The fingers, especially. Oh, brutal.
It was just, oh. He,
and how can no they fly him home? Played.
What's
how,
that?
How is a two-hour flight, like, good for the brain in that situation? They flew him home with the team. That's crazy.
Maybe a specialist? I don't know. But no, the compression up there, like, it doesn't seem like they're very good with that whole situation in Miami. You would think.
And even and then the coach said it was like only a concussion after the game. It's like, he doesn't get it. He still doesn't get it. It's just crazy.
Well, it's always the second one that's worse. It's never the first one. You could run head first into a brick wall as hard as you can, and then you just bonk your head on like a door frame the next day. The second one is what's going to do all the damage because your brain's already bruised. It's already sustained a little traumatic injury. It's scary stuff, that concussion stuff. I'm like very I got a couple, but never to the point where I'm just like curling my fingers or having a seizure. I blacked out once when I was like 14. I got lit up.
Hockey or fight?
Hockey, loose, yeah. Loose puck, playing the Stony Creek. Oh, what are they called? Stony Creek something. Came across the red line. A guy came out of nowhere and just buried me. Fell back. Forgot where I was, blacked out, sat up. I'm like, what am I doing here? Jumped on the bench, and then I just continued playing. Because back then, when you're 14, 13, it's just like, whatever. You know, no one knows what it was back then. That was back in the Stone Age. No one even knew what a concussion was. So, all right, back to hockey. Back to hockey, Tim. There's some news to talk about, the salary cap increase. We got some the drama surrounding the Calgary Flames, all those guys who got traded. Now Daryl Sutter dips his toe into the controversy and starts making some comments, which I love. We got some quick hits, but let's start with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Sheldon Keefe made an interesting comment. I like his comment. What did he say about Mitch Marner, Tim?
So, yeah, one of the Leafs reporters, I want to say Luke Fox, tweeted out yesterday or the day before that Marner is getting reps at defense during training camp, primarily playing with Riley, and that they are giving him a look at that, and they're talking about that during the season. And it came up that this has been discussed before. I think Marner might have been the one who brought it up. And then Keith came in and said, basically, it's only going to be situational. He said there could be opportunities in games where we might want to give him a look on defense, whether we're trying to score a goal or playing from behind, whatever the case might be, that we might give him some opportunity there to see what it looks like. So break that down. What does that mean situationally? I mean, you're down a goal. Is that like, what did that actually look like in terms of X's and O's?
Well, I don't think this is the first time we've seen this, but X's and O's, what this says is, we have one defenseman who is okay with the puck and the other five are garbage. And we don't want you out there ruining our offense when we need a goal. Muzzin, Giordano, Brody, Sandin, Hall. No, go away. And I get it. I like it. We've seen other teams do this. When I was with the San Jose Sharks, they would play Marlowe, Thornton, Hurdle, and put Cooch on the point with Brent Burns. When I was with Chicago, they would have Duncan Keith and Patty Kane up top. Then you'd have Sharp, Posa, and Taves. What a murderous row that was. Ooh. Are you kidding me? Kane and Keith up top with Sharp, Posa, and Taves? So good. Like, that's scary how good that lineup was. But what this does, it just gives them a flexibility. The only problem is, I've seen that happen in the power play. I've seen it happen when you're pushing for a goal or you're pulling your goalie. You can't count on Marner to play defense at all because everyone's going to say, well, what if it's a 2-on-2 or what if you know, the devil's advocate? What if they throw the puck in Marner's corner? Marner is not going back to pick up a puck with the chance of getting blown up by a Tom Wilson. That's not going to happen. I think this is a no-brainer. I think this is a moot point. I think he should have been doing this from the outset. If you don't have two defensemen who can control a play, you're confident. If you don't have the luxury of having a Sergachev and a Hedman or other teams that have puck moving defensemen that aren't going to blow up a play, why not? Mitch Marner is one of the most talented players in the NHL. And if you feel confident with him at the point, go for it. He won't be the high guy. Maybe he'll be on the wing. You have Riley at the point. Then you have Marner on the one side and Matthews on the other side. Then you have Tavares and Nylander down low, or you throw somebody else into the mix. Maybe you put Michael Bunting in front of the net. But it gives you the flexibility of just having another puck-moving guy up top. And the way teams work now, what Colorado does, there's really no point guy when they're pressing for a goal. You see McCars behind the net for a good portion of the power play, and you have Landeskog up top. Not Landeskog. It would be Rantanen up top. And then there's always motion. Because the way defenses work now, the way penalty kill works now, everybody knows what you're going to do. And the way to thwart a good penalty kill is motion. It's chaos. Because there's no way to say, I have that defenseman, I have that defenseman, I have this guy, and then I'll take those two guys. Because you're always trying to create a two-on-one. But when there's motion and you're confusing those guys and they don't know who you're picking up, if I'm playing a penalty kill versus Colorado, I'm like, okay, I got Makar, he's playing the point there. Holy cow, he's behind the net now. What do I do? And that's how you break down penalty kills, and that's how you break down defense. And if Toronto can do that by putting Mitch Marner on top, it's a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, but what you're talking about, those examples you gave, like Chicago, isn't the big thing that you're talking about power play, where they're like either having a four forwards and a defenseman on the power play, or maybe something overtime specialty is one thing, but like regular 5-on-5 hockey, isn't this something a little bit different than what you talked about?
Not really. I think this is hand in hand, where he will only be out there when they need a goal. Like, I don't think Marner is going to be playing 5-on-5 middle of the game. I apologize for my mic. I got excited. Tim sent me a message. I was like right into it. I get all excited when I talk about this stuff. But no, I think this is a smart move. I don't know why more coaches don't do this. I don't know why more coaches don't put out 5 forwards. Put out your 5 best offensive players and go for it. If you're down a goal, why not? Why not if you're Colorado, or if you're Edmonton, or if you're Toronto? Offensive zone faceoff. We're going Matthews, Bunting, Marner, Tavares, Nylander, Jankark, and maybe Riley if someone needs a change. You know what I mean? It just doesn't make sense to me to force a situation if I'm forced to go for a goal and just say, oh, you know what? I have to put out Darnell Nurse or Evan Bouchard or Tyson Berry. I have to put those guys out. No, you don't. I'm going Nuge, Draisaitl, Hyman, Yamamoto, McDavid, and Kane. Those are my 6. I don't know why more coaches just don't do that, because when you look at the talent, most of it's up front. It's very rare when you have a team with a defenseman who can control a play and not mess it up and be as creative as the offensive guys are. Colorado has that. Tampa Bay has that. Nashville has that. But there's not a lot of teams where you can just say, I trust that guy to make plays. So it seems like the way the game's going, the way coaches are being creative and offensive, and just you don't really have a position. I don't know why this hasn't evolved more. You're down a goal third period. Throw Nugent Hopkins as a defenseman. I want the Nuge and Yamamoto to be my defenseman. Like, it makes more sense to have that than to have a defenseman who's traditionally back there, who's going to be a facilitator and panic maybe and dump it in or shoot it or turn it over. We've seen many times, or even Hedman's done it, where he's at the point where he maybe gets pressured and he makes a mistake and it's just the puck's out of the zone. And seconds matter. If puck goes out of the zone, then you got to regroup. That's another 40 seconds. So I don't know. Maybe he might
I'm a
be,
little.
You're skeptical?
Well, I'm a little surprised to hear your take on this, because most of the hockey Twitter in the last 24 hours is just roasting the Leafs for this. Like, typical, they can't figure it out, so they got their best offensive player playing defense. He's small and undersized. He's going to get blown up. Everyone's just kind of laughing at the Leafs, but you're a little bit more evolved with your take here. I like it.
I think they'll love having Mitch Marner up top. He's not a shooter. He's a facilitator. He's going to be able to see the ice more. You have a little more time. I think this is going to be a successful little experiment. It's going to be great. I think this will force more teams to do this. Because look at the teams. If I'm in the NHL, wouldn't I want, if I'm even Calgary or these Vancouver team, would I not want a playmaking forward at the top rather than putting a guy up there who, you know, has a pretty good shot, but doesn't have the hands of a skilled forward?
Well,
why not?
think about the Bruins, right? Like, you're going to have a big three up front, and then wouldn't you rather have, like, Krejci or Hall next to McAvoy instead of a Grizzlick or Carlo? Like, who's – I mean, Lindholm is pretty good, but none of those guys are super offensive. And even McAvoy isn't putting up a ton of points. So, yeah, I see it. I see it.
Well, even a Craig Smith in that situation, who has much better – even a Nozick, who is their fourth line – pretty much any forward who isn't just a plumber, like you wouldn't want Trent Frederick or Nick Foligno, any other guy who was more comfortable controlling the puck in tight situations, you would want up there during a situation when you need to score. I'm talking 4 minutes left in the game. You're down by one or two. That's when you do it. You're not doing this to start a period. You're not doing this middle of the game. These situations only arise when you're down a goal. And that's it. You pull the goalie, 6-on-5, power play, 5-on-4. For those who don't think this is a good idea, why would you not want your best players on the ice? Get all your offensive guys on the ice to score a goal. I don't understand the reasoning why you wouldn't want that, especially when you don't have a good defenseman who can score. I don't know. It makes too much sense to me. I don't know.
No,
I like the idea. I like it. Let's move on. We can't talk about the Leafs all the time. The cap projections were released a few weeks ago. I think they did this, maybe a week and a half. We haven't got a chance to touch on it. We've been doing interviews, but I really was shocked by the projections coming out. So the NHL released something. It gave the teams a 4-year glimpse into the future. This year, 82.5. Next year, 83.5. And then we see the new TV deal. We see maybe teams getting fans back in the building, a big jump, 2024, 2025. They're projecting it to be 87.5 to 88 million. And then the year after that, heads up, $92 million. Now, I don't know where they get this projection from. This seems a little aggressive in my eyes to just project at 10 million more in 4 years. But who knows? The reason I'm skeptical, the Canadian economy is in a downward spiral. And the NHL as a whole, they lean on that revenue from Canada so heavily. The NHL could care less if LA, San Jose, Arizona, Dallas, Nashville, Carolina, Florida, Tampa Bay, they could care less if those guys don't make much money. Yes, it stings a little bit. But if the big six in Canada don't pull in some money, and if that Canadian dollar suffers a little bit, none of this will happen. These projections won't be nearly as high. So if the Canadian dollar continues to plummet and stink and Trudeau drives this country even further into a recession, that cap won't raise that much because you need that revenue from Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary. They make a ton of money. Their ticket sales are through the roof. Their concessions are through the roof. They sell out every single game. That's where the big slice of the pie is for the HRR. It's those Canadian teams. Everybody knows it. Bettman knows it. And you need that Canadian dollar to be strong. If the Canadian dollar was on par with the US dollar, that salary cap number would be $100 million. That's how important it is for that Canadian dollar to be strong. And right now, it's not looking good. The way the housing market in Canada is, something needs to happen in Canada. But all that aside, let's just say that's not on the table. Let's just say what they projected is true. In 2025, it will be a $92 million salary cap. That's a pretty big deal. $10 million more to spend in 4 years. GMs are happy. Players are happy. More money into the system. Which player, Tim, in your eyes, looks at that and goes, oh, baby, yes, baby. And which player looks at that and goes, ah, come on, man, really?
Well, Austin Matthews comes to mind. He's got a big renewal coming up, I think, in 2 seasons. So I think he's a free agent in 23-24. And so they're going to try to lock him up as soon as possible. So I think probably next summer we're trying to lock him up next spring. But, yeah, if this trend continues, it won't be at 92 at that point. But if it's looking like it's going to be, he's going to want like $15 million. And he'll probably get it, especially in the open market, if the Leafs don't ask for that and don't commit to it. I don't know. Who else is up for like a big renewal in the next couple of years?
That's Dreisaitl, Matthews, all those guys. I don't know if agents knew, they must have, that the big cap increase is happening in 24, 25, 25, 26, because there's a lot of play. Pasternak slicking his chop. There's a lot of guys who are up in that range who will be due for a pretty substantial raise. The name that sticks out to me is Paul MacKinnon just signed a new deal, and Cale Makar just signed a new deal. When you look at the Colorado Avalanche cap friendly page, last year it's like, oh, they're going to be in trouble. All of a sudden, the cap raises by $10 million, and their core is tied up for a long time. They got Landeskog tied up. They got MacKinnon tied up. They got Nichushkin tied up. They got Makar tied up. And these guys are signed to 28, 29, 30, 31, and 29, 30. So that $12.5 million contract that Nathan MacKinnon just signed, check back in 4 years, that'll be probably like the 10th or 11th highest contract in the NHL. And he'll still be only 30 years old and probably still one of the best players in the NHL. So he could potentially be in his career, have two of the most team-friendly contracts of all time, and they've been long-term contracts. And then the Cale Makar contract, that's already a bad contract. He's already underpaid at $9 million. Fast forward 4 or 5 years, he's going to be a free agent again in 27, 28. That guy's going to be drastically underpaid. Drastically. Like, he should be making arguably maybe double what he's making in 3 years. And that's not even too far-fetched to say. If you're Cale Makar and you continue to rack up Norris's and Conn Smythe's and changing the way people see defensemen, and you're only making $9 million and some guys around the league are making 15, 16, it isn't that far-fetched to say that you should be making $18 million. Now, that being said, I think people are getting a little, you know, maybe too ahead of their skis a little bit on this. So, oh, he's going to be making 18. He's going to be making 15. Right now, McDavid is the highest paid player in the NHL. He makes $12.5 million, right? That's 15%.
As of right now, yeah.
As of right now, he makes 15% of his salary, of the salary cap as a whole. So if you project that to $92 million, 15% of that is only 13.875. So I don't see GMs really going nuts signing guys for $15, $16 million. I don't think it works. I think we might see a $14 million player, maybe. But I don't know. This is good. What this will happen is that the higher-end guys will make more money. The lower-end guys will make a little more. And the middle group there will still be making $2, $3 million.
Well, I think the thing you got to keep in mind, though, is McDavid was kind of a discount. That was a hometown deal. That was him sticking with his team. So if one of these top-tier players does become an unrestricted free agent, I think we could see them for close to 20% of a salary, more than 15, which is like, we'll use Matthews as an example. If he doesn't want to stay in Toronto and he hits the open market, he's going to get basically whatever he wants, which is the difference between from McDavid.
What is the highest number then? If the cap is $92 million and you're a GM, are you willing to part with 20% of the cap? What's 20% of 92, Tim? Let's do it right now. 92 times 0.2, that's $18.5 million. Are you willing to write your check and say, Matthews, 18 and a half for 7 years, welcome aboard?
Okay, well, before I answer that.
Answer the question!
Think about the next 2 years. Does Matthews win a playoff round? Does that factor into your decision-making? Forget about the goals he puts up. If you don't have any playoff success, is that the horse you want to hitch your cart to?
You tell me. I just asked you that question right now. So he's leaving Toronto in 2 years. He's 24-25. 2024-25, he will be 27 years old. He scored 60 goals. Let's just say he gets 50 and 55 the next 2 years. Who cares what Toronto does? Are you going to give that guy $18.5 million? That's 20% of your salary. That's a lot.
That's real. I think that's too high. That's too high. No.
Okay.
But
you just said someone would.
someone might. I'm not doing that. It depends on the team too. And you know, 2 years is a long way away. A lot could happen. So we'll see how that shakes out.
Yeah, just looking at teams that are successful, like the Avalanche, their highest paid player makes 11% of the cap. When you look at a team like Tampa Bay, their highest paid player makes 11% of the cap. 20% would be insane.
Well, you've also talked about this all summer long, is like the teams that win are home drafted talent. And like, you can sign big free agents and still do well. But when your main guy you're building around is a free agent signing, it never works out. It just never does.
I agree. But you're seeing these guys, the way that contracts are being doled out these days, I think that line of thinking might go out the window, because you see these young guys signing these deals right out of their entry level contract. And they're still 21 years old for 8 years. That puts them to 27, 28, where they're still really good. So I think my thinking might change in the future, but right now it's tough to win when you have to pay through the nose for a free agent. But it is fun to watch. It is fun to watch the team that I look at. I took a lot of heat for this, Tim. I took a lot of heat when I said the things that I said about the Ottawa Senators. How good does their core look right now? If this projection plays out, $92 million in 25, 26, 87, 88, and 24, 25, you look at their team, fast forward 3 years, 4 years, they'll have Tkachuk, Norris, Shabbat Shalom, Stutzel, and Batherson. Five elite players locked up for only $37 million. That's pretty legit. You have $50 million to spend and your top five guys are already locked up. That's dangerous. That's and I wrote in our agenda, could, underlined bold, because this is a big could. We don't know how these players are going to pan out. I think the verdict is in on a few of them. Shabbat's a legit. He's a legit 1A defenseman. He's a good defenseman. Tkachuk is a legit centerman. The guy's good. He's put up points in this league. The verdict is still out on Stutzel, Batherson, and Norris, I think. They're trending in the right direction. I think if they continue to improve, they will be very, very, very potentially superstar players. All that being said, could Ottawa be the new Colorado? Where you look at their roster, you look at their salary, and you go, holy cow, how do they do that? How do they lock these guys up for this long term, and they have all that money to spend? Because I'm talking Tkachuk signed to 27-28. Norris is signed through 29-30. You got Stutzel signed for 30-31. Shabbat Shalom signed from 27-28. These guys are signed for a long term. Batherson's only 26-27, and he's only making 4.9. Could this team be the new Colorado, where players want to go to Ottawa? Who knows if they're going to lock up DeBrincat? That's a whole other ball of wax. He's all of a sudden balking where he's a little unsure if he wants to stay in Ottawa. Is this the new Colorado, Tim? Is this a team that in 5 years you look at the roster and they go, gosh, is Norris only making 7.9? Brady Tkachuk's only making 8.2? Stutzel's making 8.3? How is that possible? Shabbat's only making 8? Other guys like his talent are making 14? And he's only making 8. Is this where Ottawa's headed?
Yeah, we've been singing their praises for a couple of years and what they're doing, what they're building, and they've made all the right moves. And it's a good point. Like, just say someone like, I don't know, Brett Pesce from Carolina takes a couple big steps and he's like the next big thing among defensemen. He wants a big pay raise. Yeah, like to your point, like Shabbat only making $8 million and other guys putting up similar minutes and points and numbers and all that are making 12 or 14. Like, it's going to look really good. And I think that's what the GM is betting on. So I think this team in a really good position. I kind of want to see Detroit follow suit. They're the next team I think is on the way up.
Yeah.
And Anaheim. Anaheim too.
Well, it's just teams that set themselves up in good positions for cap. And I think, you know, 4 years ahead, no one really has anybody signed, but teams like Detroit, teams like Minnesota, they're going to have a ton of money once you get the Parisian Suter cap hits off. That's $14 million. That's going to coincide with the salary cap raising. And we know Billy Guerin is not afraid to make a move. Teams like that, teams like Vancouver, who are always pressed for cap space. Well, we got to trade Bo Horvat. We got to let go of money. Vegas, they're going to benefit from stuff like this. I think everybody benefits. But teams that are in the cap crunch now are going to benefit the most. Teams like the Rangers, I'm interested to see what they do. They have a good core locked up. Zibanejad's locked up for a long time. Fox is locked up for a long time. They got Panarin to figure out in a few years. But I do think the teams that are pressed for cap space are the ones that look at this and they go, good. But then you look conversely, teams like Pittsburgh or Washington, their window is closed and they had to go through the COVID era dealing with no cap space and they weren't allowed to bring in other players to aid because they didn't have any space. Cause usually year it raises 5% year upon year. And it didn't raise at all. I'm like, dang it. Like that was our window. We didn't get it. We didn't get that 5% bump to get that veteran forward. We could bring in for $2 million and to really push our team over the top. And so there's like, imagine if Pittsburgh had an extra $10 million or $4 million to work with, they would have been a drastically different team. So those teams kind of stinks a little bit, but it's good for hockey. Now, a lot of the questions swirling is what happens to escrow? Escrow is always the main topic when you see the salary cap rise, when you see it fall. Players owe so much money in escrow. the salary cap rising doesn't really do much for escrow. The players are going to owe what the players are going to owe, whether it's an $82 million cap, whether it's a $92 million cap. In the eyes of players, the more money in the system, the better. Because that's more monies in players' pockets. It's a good thing. So I don't know. The players will always owe escrow. It's going to be around forever. They'll never get rid of it. It was a mistake when they brought it in 2004. Trevor Linden, thank you very much. Ruined it for everybody. But it's just one of those things where it's a way of life. They'll just have to pay more money. And it all goes back to Canada. Even the NHL players know it. I'm like, how's the Canadian dollar doing? Because they give you escrow projections throughout the year. It's like, okay, this quarter, we're taking off 13% of your check. Oh, the Canadian dollar is struggling. Next quarter, we're going to take off 17% of your check, because the NHL doesn't want the players to owe money at the end of the year that they have to get a check from everybody. They want the opposite to happen, where they've overpaid escrow. It's like your insurance for your house. You always get a check back every year for you house owners, you know, for taxes. Oh, you overpaid, so you owe this much. It's the same thing for escrow. Players, they just take it right off your check. You don't have to write the NHL a check at all. You get your check every 2 weeks and it goes, okay, there's a state tax, federal tax, escrow right there. And so they adjust that based on the Canadian dollar, basically. And it's just like a stupid Canada, man. Trevor Linden. When I get upset, Tim, you know what I do? I go to the fridge. I look in there. Usually there's no food because my kids are animals. They eat everything. And if they don't eat it, they make it look disgusting. So I don't even want to touch it. That means I fire up my phone, DoorDash app, and I get me a nice hoagie delivered right to my door. It calms me down. It fills up the belly, and I'm able to just go forward with my day and chop some wood. And that's what I've been doing lately, just chopping the wood. And I need some sustenance to keep me going through the day. And I use DoorDash, and I get it, and I get it fast, and I get it cheap. DoorDash is a terrific company. And if you use our promo code GlovesDD, if you're in Canada, GlovesDD US, if you're in the US of A, you get 25% off. You get free delivery. You get yourself a good hoagie. I had one of the best sandwiches I ever had last week. It was
coming by it.
Restaurant in Traverse City called The Fresh Coast. It was delicious. DoorDash, melted cheese, got it to me. Pickle spear wrapped up in the sandwich. So incredibly good. Could not have happened without the DoorDash app. So you should use it. It's so incredibly easy to use. Use our promo code. Get yourself a deal. Get yourself some food. Who wants to make food, Tim? Not me. Not me. Not every day. Not all the time. Maybe sometimes, but not when I'm hungry chopping wood.
Listen, I'm home with my mom. Do you think she's got food waiting for me? No.
Deirdre doesn't cook.
I'm firing up DoorDash.
She's flying around town. She's not worried about Tim coming home. You got a bachelor party. You're probably going to DoorDash. Who knows? What can you DoorDash? Oh, we'll find out tonight, Tim. I don't know. But anyways, everybody, use DoorDash.
Sometimes doing your VAT return can feel like going 12 rounds in the ring. Oh, with a gorilla. When you're dressed as a banana. But Xero accounting software can help. Doing your VAT return online with Xero will feel less like rounds of punches and more like rounds of golf.
Good shot.
With a buggy. That's been souped up to the max. For help with your VAT return and making tax digital, search Xero with an X.
Hello there, it's Vicky Patterson from the podcast The Secret 2, the show where I go on a mission to find out the secret to everything with my all-star crew of celeb guests. And this week, my show is sponsored by Gala Bingo. Wouldn't it be nice if you could always try before you buy? Well, at Gala, you can. Players get a free spin of the wheel every day with a guaranteed win each week. So join the other players online at Gala Bingo, where a little joy goes a long way. Bingo! 18 plus, please play responsibly. Free games play every day. Midnight till 11:45 p.m. in Prosecco Room. Minimum daily prize pool, £2,000. Minimum player win, 1p. Max 12 tickets per game. T's and C's apply.
All right, Daryl Sutter. Guy's usually reserved, quiet. Doesn't really step too outside of, you know, he's very calculated with his comments. His latest comments about Matthew Tkachuk were a little interesting, Tim. What did you think of that? What did he say? And I want to get your thoughts.
Yeah, it's not too often you get, like, you know, actual tidbits of information, actual, like, really poster worthy stuff from when these trades happen. And I think what one of the reasons that we are seeing it here is that the way the trade happened was also unusual. Gaudreau leaving the Flames last minute. I think the story is that he egged them on and kind of like made it seem like he was going to come back, and then last minute left. They're scrambling. They're able to wheel and deal and made a great move out of it. Made, you know, turn the ship around, thankfully. But yeah, there's a lot of little information here. So I'll start with the starter one. He was asked in a press conference about the similarities between Tyler Toffoli, who's on the Flames, and Tkachuk, which I thought was kind of a strange question anyway. They're not that similar, and Tkachuk's a much better player, even at Toffoli's peak. I don't know where that question came from, but he said, and didn't mince words, he said, no, one guy's won Stanley Cups, been part of long playoff runs. Shots fired.
Tkachuk. Like, so good.
Yeah, and Tkachuk hasn't made it. Has he made it out of the first round? I don't think. And I know he did. Yeah, obviously they won the first round, but he hasn't really been a part of anything successful.
Doesn't want to stand
the cup. And he hasn't produced that much in the playoffs points-wise. He hasn't put up any big numbers yet. And Toffoli wasn't a huge playoff producer, but he was a clutch playoff producer when he was with the Kings. Like, big goals and big moments, overtime, that big thing. So, yeah, I love that Sutter didn't hold back there.
Even last year, Tkachuk put a bunch of points up in the first game when they waxed Edmonton. I think he put up like 4 or 5 points. He had a bunch of goals. After that, he was very, very quiet. So, I enjoy this. I do. I think Daryl Sutter, I like him. Him and I had plenty of run-ins throughout my career. He was my coach for the All-Star game. Good guy. Farmer. Salt of the earth. Doesn't care for a Matthew Tkachuk type player. And that's just, everybody can see that. Tkachuk has a lot of flair to his game. He's very outspoken. He's in your face. He lets you know how he feels, and he lets everybody know how he feels about everything. He's just that type of player. Very loud. Daryl Sutter, reserved, stoic. Looks like a mean son of a gun. You wouldn't want to cross him. He's a farm boy. Doesn't like Tkachuk. I love what he said here. He's like, you don't want to be here? I'm gonna go scorched earth on you. Beat it. Like, you made your bed. You haven't won anything. I got Tyler Toffoli. He's a clutch performer. And I'll go into battle with that guy any day of the week rather than you, Matthew Tkachuk. So, yeah, I loved it. Matthew Tkachuk will respond. He will. And this will be it'll drag on somewhat because I'm sure Matthew will get asked that question. Did you hear Daryl Sutter's comments on you? He's like, I hated playing for him or something like that. But it's good. It's good for the game. These guys are passionate about winning. Daryl Sutter likes being in Calgary. Tkachuk obviously didn't. They're allowed to be upset about it. I don't think anybody should have their feelings hurt about this. What else is happening? And as the Calgary turns here, this is our new drama for the season.
Yeah, it didn't stop there. And this is one where it's like, can you read into this or not? But Johnny Gaudreau was asked about, like, I forget the exact question, but he was asked about just leaving Calgary and like the stuff that they're doing. And his message was basically, no, I'm focused on Columbus. But the way that he worded it, he said, no, I mean, when I say I love Calgary, it's the city. He talked about the fans. But now that I'm with Columbus, I couldn't care less what they do as a team. So you could look at this one way, and it's like, hey, I'm on Columbus. I'm focused on this. I don't care about my past teams. And that's fair enough. And maybe that's all it was. Or, again, there's some smoke where there's fire here. Could you look into this and saying, like, hey, I don't care about those guys anymore. They're part of my past. That is a bridge burned. That's not part of my life anymore. You know, how much do you read into that?
Well, I think the latter. I think you can contrast that to a Zuccarello comment when he was on our show this week, where he was talking about the Rangers, how he's still really good friends with those guys. You know, it was tough to leave. It was a good situation, but for whatever reason, he had to move on. You can tell he's still really has a good friendship with Zibanejad and Kreider, and he was torn up about leaving the New York Rangers. You contrast that to Johnny Gaudreau, where he's like, oh, it's a nice city. Didn't mention any of the guys on the team. Didn't mention anything about the staff, anything. There was some issues in that locker room. I don't know what. I'm not a Calgary insider. But for him to leave and say the things that he said, and for Tkachuk to leave the way that he'd left, I wonder what was going on in that room. Because when you look at their makeup, you would think that would be a tight-knit group. You got Lindholm, who's been there forever. Toffoli is an obviously proven veteran. Luch seems to control a room if he wants to. Then on the back end, you have veteran guys. Something didn't gel there. something happened. I don't know if it was the coach. I don't know if it was the players, but there was something happening with the dynamics of that team that didn't work. This doesn't happen when your top two guys all of a sudden just want to jump ship and they're not happy and they air it publicly. Yes, you might not have, you know, the best relationship with a guy here or a guy there. For two guys to leave and to just air their laundry, they're not doing it terribly bad, but this does to me speak volumes, where he's just like, it's a nice city. Yeah, I guess. I'm in Columbus now. Like, he played 10 years there. You have not one good thing to say about Lindholm or anybody. You know, it's going to be sad not playing with those guys anymore. We built a really good friendship. Those are guys that I'm going to, you know, think about the rest of my life. They were family. Nothing. I like the city. It was okay. A couple of good restaurants. Stampede was fun a couple of years. Like, it's just, it's very eye-opening. And then you have the guy coming to Calgary. What did he say, Tim? Jonathan Huberdeau.
Yeah, so this is an important story. So when he was told by Bill Zito that he was being traded, he said, F you, just right to his over the phone. So, and this is a clip that Chickwitz pointed out, and they had Yandel on. And so this is an important distinction there, because Biz said, like, what did you hear when he told he was being traded to the Calgary? And he said, F you. And then he said, well, I don't know that he said it about being traded to Calgary, just that he was being traded, period. And that's an important distinction, because I don't want to, you know, make a drama when there's not there. But he was not happy about being traded, putting up 115 points and then being shipped out of town. And a part of it's like, hey, you're bringing in like a younger player, 5 years younger, putting up similar points. He's like, am I just chopped liver now? So I wonder how much of this is true and what his reaction truly was in the room in that moment.
I think this is true. I don't want to bring it back to me, but I will. But when I got traded from Arizona by Don Baloney, he pulled me in the stick room, and it was just him and I in there. And he looked at me, he goes, John, I've just traded you. And I looked him square in the eye and I said, you got to be effing kidding me. And he goes, excuse me. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Are you serious? And I was completely shocked by the news. And I think that's what happened here, where Jonathan Huberdeau did not expect to be traded. He's their best player. MVP caliber season, has been hands down their biggest points producer for the last few years. And he gets a call from the GM saying, we traded you. He's like, it's just a knee jerk reaction. Like, come on, are you kidding me? And I had the same reaction, and I'm not an MVP caliber player. I was a schmelt who was in and out of the lineup. And I still had that same reaction, my GM face to face. So I get it. Players don't like to be traded. It's a very human reaction to be wanted. It's just ingrained in us, where it's like, I want to be wanted. And when someone doesn't want me, it hurts you to the core, whether you're getting broken up with, whether you're being fired, whether you're being traded, any situation, you're the last kid picked on the kickball court growing up in school. It hurts, because everybody wants that feeling. And when you have your boss, your GM come to you and say, we don't want you anymore, you don't even think about the team that's trading for you, that they want you. Your instant reaction is, you don't want me. Why? Because I'm not good enough. And it hurts. And you're like, F you, man. I am good enough. I'm good enough. I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me. But it hurts. It honestly hurts. You almost get brought to tears, because you invest so much time in this team. You see the friendships and all this stuff, and it's your life, and you're completely upended. And you just had your best season ever, and you're an MVP candidate, and you're the heart and soul of the team, and you're Jonathan Huberdeau, and you're one of the top 10 players in the NHL, and you still get traded. Yeah.
There was
a few, man.
There was a great tweet yesterday. The NBA traded, like, one team traded like four bench players for another team's four bench players. Just, I don't know why. And I don't follow the NBA, but the guys were just like, yeah, this makes no sense for either team. And someone said, all you're doing is making a bunch of guys get new apartments for no reason. Like, yeah, that's all happening. They're not going to play in these new cities either. It's fine.
You're uprooting all these people and their families and everything, but hey, it's a business. And I wanted to ask Zooks about this, but I felt bad about the whole Rangers trade. And I'm like, is that when it became a business to you, when you had it like an unwritten, you know, agreement with, who was their guy there? Jeff Gordon. It's like, okay, I'll get you on the next deal. Cause I'm sure they had that conversation, help the team out now. and then we'll re-up you when we get some more room. I'm like, I was wondering if that's when it became a business for him. Because every player has that moment where it's like, okay, this is a business. These guys don't have your best interest. They don't like you. They don't care about you. This is all a business. So I was wondering if that was it for him when it was like, okay, I got to look out for number one, sign a big deal in Minnesota, get some terms, 5 years, $6 million. I'm set for life now. I'm just interested. All right, Tim, anything else on this?
No.
Okay. Let's do some quick hits. This has been a good episode. I've been enjoying this. Sometimes coming in, you're like, oh, this one's going to be a little bit of a drag. I'm actually enjoying this one. We're having a lot of good conversation. It's nice. It's nice.
Okay. Nice. Let's start with the first one. Spencer
Was that Borat you were trying to?
No, it's one of the Adam Sandler movies when the guy's like, oh, these scrawny arms. No, they're not scrawny. They're nice.
They're nice. They're nice. Oh, yeah. Okay. That's funny.
They're nice. Spencer Knight, friend of the show, signed an extension with Florida, 3 years at 4.5. Do you think they're betting on him to take over the job from Bobrovsky?
Well, yeah, they just signed him for $4.5 million. That's a lot of money tied up for two goalies.
It is, but Bobrovsky's still got $10 million on some term there. I don't know how many more years.
Who knows? Who knows what's happening? Bobrovsky, there's chinks in his armor. The guy, he's not the same goalie that he was 5 years ago, let alone 2 years ago. Spencer Knight's the present and the future for the Florida Panthers. If they want to win a cup, game one, I think you're dressing Spencer Knight. He's a friend of the show, too.
You know what's funny? There was a graphic tweeted out by the NHL last week. Sergei Bobrovsky has won two Vezina trophies. Two. Do you know who's won one? Henrik Lundqvist has won one. Ryan Miller has won one. Carey Price has won once. Tuukka Rask has won once. Vasilevsky has won once. Fleury has won once. Pekka Rinne won one. And Bobrovsky won two. It's crazy.
He was crazy. When he was in his prime, elite. Well, the Vezina speak for themselves. He was an elite goaltender. Ever since coming over to Florida, he's shown glimpses of it, but he's not the same guy that we once knew. Gosh, was he good. When he started out and he was in like Philadelphia, then Columbus, he was so incredibly good. So incredibly good. His numbers were just outstanding. 931 save percentage, almost a 1.99 goals against average. Like the guy was lights out. He never really had much playoff success. Those Columbus teams, they were good. Not great, obviously, but man, was he good. He was. And in Florida, it just hasn't worked. His first year there, 3.23 goals against, 9 save percentage, 2.91 goals against, 9.06 save percentage. Last year, a little better, but still not, you know, not the guy you signed for $10 million 10 years. Definitely not that guy. When you're rolling out a 9.13 save percentage and we signed you at 9.31, a little bit of a difference there. A little bit of a difference. But anyways, that's funny.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but the Trevor Zegras hit. You saw that, I'm assuming. What'd you think of that?
No, it's a beautiful hit. Keep your head up, kid. It was a monster hit.
Do you like, even if it's a clean hit, are you cool with Henrik fighting the guy? Is that still something he should answer for?
Yeah, I don't care. I think that's fine. Henry got his doors beaten off. That guy who hit Zegras was pretty tough. So I don't mind it. He's your best player, Zegras. One of them. Got to stick up for him. Maybe not Henrique. Maybe get someone who can send an actual message, but whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it was in the moment there.
All right, Toronto Maple Leafs news, Tim. Johnny Tavares, he's out a couple weeks, minimum three, potentially more, oblique strain. He's had the same injury. He had the same oblique injury 3 years ago. I had to look up where the oblique was. It's in your abdomen. It's not good news for the Toronto Maple Leafs. This is a guy who's, how old is Tavares now?
32, 33.
He's had this injury before. When they don't have a John Tavares, this team is not very good. It's noticeable when he's out of the lineup. We saw in the playoff run when he got that hit by Corey Perry, the team completely fell apart. When John Tavares is out of the lineup, Toronto is a drastically different team. They need this guy to be healthy. If he's injured going into the season, which he is going to be, he probably missed the first couple weeks of the season. This is an injury that will linger. He's going to be rushed back because they're going to be struggling to begin the season. It's not good. These core injuries that don't have time to fully heal, where you don't give them a couple months – gosh, that's too bad. I like Toronto this year. Hopefully they give him the time just to heal up 100%. But knowing Johnny T, he's their captain. They're going to want him out there, but it's a tough break for Toronto. It's a tough break. All right. What else are we talking about?
Did you see that Slavkovsky kid with the first overall pick with Montreal? Did you see that he weighs 238 pounds, which is top five in weight in the entire NHL? He's only 18. He's like right behind like Hedman and Ovechkin. Who's that big? Yeah. Who's that big defenseman who was with Ottawa?
Alexiak.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like crazy. He's like, there's a couple of clips of him playing and he's just guys bouncing off him. Like he took an open ice hit and the guy was the one who went down.
It was here in Traverse City at the prospects camp.
Was it?
He's a man amongst boys. He will be. Well, that's Jágr.
Yeah.
Said the same thing. This guy plays just like me. He's a big body, controls the puck, uses his behind to get some space. He's going to be a force. He will be a good player for years and years to come. I'm excited to watch this guy hit the NHL because he's going to be good. All right, what else?
Yeah, last thing here. The Jacob Chychrun rumors are swirling again, flying all over the league. The sixth team that he's been linked to from Darren Dreger, the Oilers and Leafs, obviously, the Blue Jackets, the Blues, the Kings, and then the Senators, which I think if I'm a betting man, I would pick on Ottawa to get this guy. You think he's got still two or three more years under contract, Jacob Chychrun, but they're moving him again, and it seems like it will probably be dealt.
It's Arizona. They're so dumb. So incredible. We've already touched on this. It's so dumb. This guy is making 4.6. He's going to cash in. He'll have the biggest salary jump, I think, of any player. That's making 4.6. Yeah. He will be bumped up to $10 million. He will more than double his salary in 25-26. He's a big body defenseman. He'll be 27 years old. The guy, if you slot him in, I don't think he's a first line 1A offensive guy. You put him on your second D pairing, he's going to be unstoppable. You don't force him to be a power play guy. You don't force him to try to put points on the board. He is a very solid, good defenseman. So, yeah, I think he is going to make $10 million when he comes to free agency.
What's interesting is, like, who is he really? Like, is he this 18-goal, 41-point player? Can he be a point-per-gamer or, like, 50, no. 60-point?
But people said that about Hedman, too. So, yeah.
Well, we've just seen a lot of young defensemen over the years that put up big numbers early and then they never replicate them again. And I don't want to say that he's not a better, more well-rounded defenseman than someone like Michael Delzato or Eric Gustafson, who put up like 65 points in Chicago. And then now he's not even on an NHL team barely. So I don't think he's that player, but he could surprise us. So I want to see what he can do in a couple more years.
I think he has the other intangibles where he's a very good defenseman. 6'2". Yeah. 215, like he's a solid kid who can move his feet and get up in the play. So he'll be making $9 to $10 million when he re-ups in 3 years. So yeah, good for Arizona. He just really, really building a championship team there, just selling everybody. We're going to build our team around Clayton Keller. Oh, he's a good player. Clayton Keller is a good player. I don't want to. You're going to ruin my day. So we had such a good show. But Nick Schmaltz, Clayton Keller, and Lawson. I like Lawson Cross. I'm not going to group that. All right, everybody. I hope you have a good weekend. I'm sorry, Arizona fans. You will have a champion one time at some point. The Phoenix Suns, maybe hit your cart to that wagon. Hit your horse to that cart.
Start hit your cart to Phoenix that horse. Suns.
Whatever. I don't care. Didn't the Diamondbacks win a World Series lately?
Yeah, 2003 or something. Yeah.
Oh, that's a long time ago. All right, everybody. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you in October. It's very exciting. Go out there, enjoy the fall, go eat a pumpkin, do something fun. The ciders are always good this time of year. A nice cider.
Do you have a nice flannel shirt, John, that you can wear this time of year?
I do. I honestly have a couple. They sit in my closet until this time of year. I'm going to bust them out. Thank you for reminding me. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good one. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.
Hello there, it's Vicky Patterson from the podcast The Secret 2. the show where I go on a mission to find out the secret to everything with my all-star crew of celeb guests. And this week, my show is sponsored by Gala Bingo. Wouldn't it be nice if you could always try before you buy? Well, at Gala, you can. Players get a free spin of the wheel every day with a guaranteed win each week. So join the other players online at Gala Bingo, where a little joy goes a long way. Bingo! 18 plus, please play responsibly. Free games play every day. Midnight to 11:45 p.m. in Prosecco Room. Minimum daily prize pool, £2,000. Minimum player win, 1 pence. Max 12 tickets per game. T's and C's apply.
Running. It moves our body, but it also moves our mind. It ignites the human spirit and can even inspire our best ideas. Whether it's 0.2 miles or 26.2, it gives us the freedom to explore new perspectives. Because when you open your stride, incredible things happen in your brain. Your mind is free to dream. Learn more at on-running.com. Dream on.